JC Corcoran Podcast. The days are so hot they can boil your brain.
It'll get a lot hotter more each day.
Oh, please, people. Ain't nothing wrong with a little heat.
Well, I guess this is the time of year for kids to horse around.
Don't just lay there getting a suntan.
So stay inside and stay cool.
For the rest of the summer.
Hey, you have a good summer too, huh?
It's summer. It's like 90 degrees out here!
God, it's so hot.
How hot is that?
Very hot.
It's hot. Getting hotter.
This is really hot.
It has been getting really hot lately.
Serious heat.
Like it. Pretty hot, isn't it?
It's 105 in the shade.
This is a record high for this day.
Broiling.
It's hot out here.
My, but it's hot.
Things are finally getting hot.
It's hot. Really hot.
It's going to be the hottest summer yet.
Summertime, 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 summertime.
Hot is hot.
It is hot in here.
Can't be more than 114.
It's going to be a good summer.
Beastly hot day in Gotham City.
Ugh, it is so hot out there.
Fantastic!
Why don't we turn the heat down on this pressure cooker?
What are we doing out there, Scully? It's hotter than hell.
Hot
stuff.
Hot town, summer in the city.
Now I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest disc jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
The heat is finally off. Well, it's in the 60s now as we go on the air at 7 a.m. Central Time. But the rain and the storms that took down the power lines and knocked down the trees and caused all the straight line wind damage the last couple of days, but especially yesterday afternoon, last night in St. Louis, all that's moving out and we're going to start having semi-normal weather for this time of year, but I'm digressing already. I'm 45 seconds into the podcast. I'm already digressing. How you doing, folks? I'm sorry about yesterday. Here's what happened. While a lot of people yesterday suffered power outages, I had an air conditioning unit go down. the only one we have. I did have a house once that had three separate air conditioning units. Not window units, central air. It was, the house was way too big. But I'm digressing again now. But anyhow, yeah, yesterday, no air conditioning, and it got up to 84 in the house, and we couldn't call it. So we didn't have air conditioning for like 24 hours. And on top of it, I'm working with this clinic that does pain management, and they give you these steroid shots in the spine. It's supposed to make these bulging discs and all this other crap I have. C1, 2, and 3 are not doing well these days. And so you get these shots, and what they do is they schedule you for a day. It's always on Thursday. That's the day that this pain management clinic I go to does all of their spinal injections, you know, just one after another. And so they call you the day before, and they tell you a time. And so they called me on Wednesday, and they said, your time is 6 a.m. It's like, well, that's not going to be a problem, I guess. Well, yeah, so that's where I was yesterday. I wasn't able to record a podcast. But, hey, we're here today, and I got a hunch we're going long here today because I got so much ground to cover, and I got to give you the review of Respect with Jennifer Hudson in the lead role as Aretha Franklin. We'll do that coming up. Maybe you saw this in the news the other day. Maryland Heights, Hollywood Casino Amphitheater, St. Louis Music Park concerts. You want to go? You either got to have proof of a vaccination or a negative COVID test card. You got Maroon 5 coming in. Yesterday was the four-year anniversary of Charlottesville. That's where you had those very nice people. Gosh, I'm trying to, who was I quoting there? I can't remember the guy who said that. I want to say happy birthday. Yesterday was the birthday of our friend Trish Gazelle. And, you know, for the longest time, I mean, a very long time, while she did it very well, you know, while she did it very well, she was sort of, I guess we would say, relegated to the role of co-host. You know, they were never going to really give her her own show, but she was always the sidekick on these FM morning shows. And it wasn't really until she got to do the gig with me at KTRS, where while she was, yes, my sidekick and partner, she had a major role, much more major than, you know, because basically what it boils down to is so many of these shows, it's one guy talking. And then the girl is sort of in the background giggling and going, oh, that's right, Bobby. And that's all they get to do. Well, I told Trish from the very first day, I said, your mic is going to be open as often as mine is. So if mine's open, yours is open. And if yours is open, I expect you to talk. And we had great, great shows over there. So then after that whole thing blew up, she went over to KEZK, and that was going okay. And then, of course, now over the course of the last 2 months or so, she's on KMOX now. So she pulls double duty. She does the FM show on KEZK and then pops up in the afternoon with Dave on KMOX. And she had a big birthday yesterday. I want to say happy birthday to my friend Trish. Day before yesterday, I received robocalls, just like you did. Didn't they tell us something that some big thing was supposed to happen, like, I don't know, June 1st or May 1st or somewhere, where the law had changed and these robocalls were supposed to go away? I guess that's why yesterday I got robocalls from Eastern Ohio, Montana, and Denmark. COVID craziness continues. I don't know if you saw this thing that was floating around on social media the last 2 days. They had down in the state of Tennessee, I don't know what town it was, Chattanooga or something, and they had one of these school board meetings about COVID and about masks and vaccines and everything like that. So the state of Tennessee, you know, they ran out this big hall, you know, and everybody's invited to come down and listen, participate, ask questions, whatever the case may be. And they bring in a bunch of men and women from the health department. And, you know, it's the lab coat crowd with the, you know, their eyes too close together and still wearing their safety glasses. And the guys, you know, like skinny ties and white socks and stuff like that. They're geeks, and they're supposed to be geeks. And you need geeks. You need people who just are fascinated with a beaker or a lab coat or a test tube. And don't know who the Kardashians are, don't know who won the Super Bowl last year. Oh, and by the way, while I was digressing, the world champion Tampa Bay Bucks have their first preseason exhibition game on Saturday night, just as Tropical Storm Fred is approaching the state of Florida and especially Tampa. So there could be a lot of running plays for Tom Brady because he's going to put the ball up in a 50-mile-an-hour wind. Good luck. I called one of those games. I called a college football game for Northern Illinois University back in the 1970s as a hurricane was approaching in Louisiana, Lake Charles, Louisiana. And about 10 minutes into the game, they made an announcement over the loudspeaker system that the path of the hurricane had changed and was coming directly for them. And like 10,000 people got up, left their seats, went to their cars because they knew that they were going to have to start boarding things up and evacuating and everything like that. And we're stuck there doing a college football game. But anyhow, they bring in these experts, epidemiologists and you know, doctors and scientists and nurses and people who study this stuff to try to explain to people down in Tennessee what's going on and with the school year getting ready to start. Anyway, to make a long story short, they were basically chased out of the place and went running to their cars, being followed by screaming Tennesseans yelling stuff. And then when they got in their cars, they're like banging on these doctors and nurses' cars and trying to smash their windshields. And the people basically got run out of town on a rail. This is what we're up against. People so completely wrong and so completely convinced that they are right. That is what we're up against. Meanwhile, the New Yorker magazine just did a big profile on two women in Alabama who managed to convince almost everyone in their small town to get the vaccine. In Alabama, about 35% of the state is vaccinated, but in their tiny town of 400 people, that rate is 94%. It's National Left-Handers Day. Roughly 12% of the world is left-handed. Only about 0.5% of guitarists play left-handed. Didn't seem to slow down Paul McCartney much. In scientific nerd news, an asteroid bigger than the Empire State Building has a slightly higher chance of hitting us than NASA originally thought. It's called Bennu, B-E-N-N-U, pronounced Bennu, and the odds of hitting Earth in the next 300 years is about 1 in 1,800. That's not good. They originally said 1 in 2,700. So they're getting a better look at the thing 300 years. And that doesn't mean in 300 years. It means sometime between right now and 300 years. So maybe not going to get us, but maybe our grandchildren's grandchildren are going to have an issue. Got a long time to think about it. You've heard those stories about them, you know, sending up some sort of a rocket with a nuclear device and trying to blow the thing to smithereens, which if they were that small, then so many more of them would exist. But so because of their density would now be smaller, they would burn up on the, you know, in the approach to the Earth's atmosphere. At least that's what the gamble is. They better be right. In other health news, doctors at UCLA found that vaping is really bad for your cells. Even doing it once might make you more susceptible to various illnesses down the road. I have why do I not believe that? And speaking of stuff like that, a study in England found that if your first job, your very first job, was really stressful, you might have a higher risk of a heart attack disease later in life. Does paperboy count? That was my first job. One guy punted, and the ball basically went straight up in the air and came straight back down. And I still remember we had to go back to the hotel afterwards, and the rain had already started by then. And what they did is they put us on buses and took us from Lake Charles, Louisiana, to Houston, where we flew out of Houston and then back to the Midwest. That was nuts. Talk a little bit about the Field of Dreams game last night. Iowa hosted their first ever Major League Baseball game last night on a specially constructed field, next to the real-life Field of Dreams movie set. White Sox beat the Yankees 9-8 with a walk-off homer in the ninth inning. Kevin Costner was there. And if you were seeing the whole Field of Dreams thing for the first time for some reason, just so you understand, where they were playing that ball game last time is not the Field of Dreams field. It's the one right next to it. And then, I'm watching the thing going, okay, when they announced the whole thing like a year ago, I'm like, oh, that's going to be great. Playing right there on the Field of Dreams field, how great it will be seeing these Major League Baseball players play on that field with just little benches on side and who knows, maybe just a couple of hundred people or a couple of thousand people just sort of circling the place and just standing along the fences up and down the left and the right field line, maybe some out in the corn. How great will that be? Well, of course, it didn't turn out to be that at all. They built a stadium. 8,000 seat stadium, which is fine, I guess, but it really flies in the face of the entire organic nature of the whole Field of Dreams thing. All these rich people or people who are somehow connected to Major League Baseball. Can you imagine how difficult a ticket that was last night for 8,000 people? Tickets were going for astronomically high prices, again, flying in the face of the organic nature of the entire Field of Dreams thing. I've done a couple of interviews over the years with the director of the movie, Phil Alden Robinson, including one that was just a couple of years after the movie had come out.
The music was so instrumental to creating moods and really kind of complementing the film.
Yeah, it's beautiful. James Horner is a wonderful composer, and I'll just tell you a quick story. The first time that I showed the film to anybody who had not been, privy to the dailies and the shoot was when I showed it to James, who was the composer. And at this point, this is in post-production, we had a rough cut of the film. I was very, very nervous. In fact, I really thought that it wasn't very good. And I just didn't know how to make it any better, and I just was throwing up my hands and saying, well, I guess this is all it'll ever be. And James came in to look at the picture to decide if he was going to score it. And I showed the film to him and his agent. And when the lights came up, the agent turned around and said, gee, Phil, it's really wonderful. I really like it. I said, oh, thanks very much. And I'm thinking, well, he's an agent. He's going to say these things, you know. And James didn't even turn around. And I'm talking to the agent, and James is still not turning around. And I'm thinking, oh, no, he hates it. And he's too embarrassed to turn around and even say, gee, thanks, but no thanks. And finally, the agent says, Jamie, what do you think? And without turning around, James said, would you excuse me for a second? And he got up and left. And I thought, oh, my God, this is just a disaster. He can't even say thank you. And the agent looks at me and he says, I'm sorry, I don't understand, I'm sorry. He goes out in the hall, comes back in a minute later, he says he's standing out there crying. And it was an electrical moment for me. And James came back in the room, wiping tears from his face, and he said, I'm speechless. And I said, gee, you don't have to say much, just say yes. And he said, yes. And that was the moment when I realized that we had something.
What's your reaction to all that, and what do you think we're being told by that?
So little of what we have a chance to do is real and organic and touches the soul, and I think that people are really hungry for that. And I think that going to this ball field and fathers having a catch with their sons is a very sweet thing.
Unbelievable.
It's more than that. It's perfect.
No. It's Iowa.
By the way, I don't know where all of those people who were at the game last night stayed overnight, because basically in Dyersville, Iowa, or just up and down that highway there, there's two Best Western hotels, and then that's pretty much it, unless you drive all the way to Galena or go someplace else, or just turn around and drive back to Chicago, which is where I think most of those White Sox fans came from last night. Again, I don't know where they went. I think I heard the word corn 300 times during the broadcast. You know what, Shane? That make it 600. It just seemed like nobody had ever seen corn growing before. And by the way, I'll bet you that was almost a Hollywood production last night. I'll bet you they brought in celebrity corn. Not green enough, not green enough. Oh, that's beautiful color. Very rich. All right, front row right here. You know, those guys. You know, that movie was shot in 1988 during one of the biggest droughts the Midwest had seen in recent years. And, you know, they weren't necessarily making a lot of friends there because they're bringing in all this water and trying to keep the grass green because of the drought. And the farmers who are all around this little spot, they were sort of getting pissed off because it's like, oh, great, our corn is just dying out there, just getting roasted in the sun, and you guys are bringing in giant tanks of water to keep your field green. Well, they ended up losing the war because it was so dry during the summer of 1988, there was no way they were going to keep the field green, so they ended up just spray painting it. So what looked so rich and sort of lush was actually paint. It was a field of paint. And by the way, the guy whose job it was to try to keep the field looking good during the production, his nickname was the, get ready, the Marquis de Sade. God bless it, everybody. That's a true story. I've been there, I guess it was three times. Once I went there, it was like a Tuesday afternoon. I just happened to be up there in that part of the country for some reason. And I remember a guy was running for president for a while. He was like a moderate Republican. His name was Paul Tsongas. And he and his whole campaign staff, everybody was out there playing on the field of dreams. Just dumb luck. I come walking up there and everybody's out there. They had some network people following around, camera crews and stuff like that. And again, it's a nice job they did. I think they did a nice job with the broadcast. Although I don't understand why we have military planes flying over sports events in the first place, because I'm watching this thing and they got the girls singing the Star Spangled Banner and they're there in Iowa, and I'm thinking to myself, well, at least we're not going to see one of those dumb military flyovers. It would be so inappropriate for this particular kind of, again, that word organic presentation. But then sure enough, here they come. Here come the jets flying over Iowa. Why do we do this? Do we even know anymore? Oh, well, JC, it's tradition. Well, there's a lot of traditions. that don't make any sense anymore that we stopped doing over the years. I just don't understand it. Football games, baseball games, I don't get it. What does it have to do with anything? The Super Bowl, seeing like a billion people all over the world. I think we've done a pretty good job already letting foreign governments know that if you piss us off, we will bomb the shit out of your country. They already know that. We don't need any additional reinforcement to that idea. If anything, maybe we should be backing off of that a little bit. But the corn. It was just all about the corn last night. Oh, by the way, you could see this coming already. But Rob Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, said they're going to return for another game next year. Starting today, Friday, on Roku, the series premiere of Thanks a Million, where 10 celebrities give $100,000 to people who've made a big impact on their lives. But the catch is that they have to give half of it away to somebody else. The celebrities include Aaron Rodgers, Jennifer Lopez, Kevin Hart, Kristen Bell, and Nick Jonas. On Sunday, AMC The Walking Dead Season 11 Preview Special. But if you have AMC Plus, you can watch the season premiere this weekend. New album from Sheryl Crow today. I love her. This is a 27-track album with live recordings from 2019, including Stevie Nicks and Brandi Carlile. Horatio Sanz, who used to be on Saturday Night Live, being sued by a woman who claims he sexually assaulted her when she was 17. And now that Mayim Bialik has been announced as one of the new Jeopardy hosts, some of her old anti-vax comments are coming back to haunt her. Oh, and there's also that time she victim-shamed Harvey Weinstein's accusers. Gonna have to start vetting the women as much as the men now. And the trailer is out for something called Impeachment, American Crime Story. It's a limited series about the Bill Clinton sex scandal. Be careful if you're at work and you bring this trailer up. There is profanity in it. A Houston restaurant called the Rusty Crab is being sued for copyright infringement on SpongeBob SquarePants. Tony Bennett has officially retired from performing on doctor's orders. He had a fall tour scheduled, but he canceled it. What is he, 95 now? I believe that's right. And Bruce Dickinson of Iron Maiden has tested positive for COVID, said his symptoms were mild. He says being vaccinated was being credited for the fact that it was a mild case. He's 63. Birthdays this weekend, John Slattery from Mad Men, 59. Danny Bonaducci. I almost replaced him at a radio station in Chicago back in the 90s. Long story. He's 62 today. Former American Surgeon General Joycelyn Elders is 88. She said, you should go home and jerk the gherkin once in a while, and she pretty much lost her job for it. Would have been Dan Fogelberg's birthday today. He was born in 51. Saturday birthdays, Tim Tebow, 34. Mila Kunis, 38. Catherine Bell from JAG. And have you seen those pictures of her on the internet? What the hell was she thinking? Man, oh man, you know what I'm talking about. The guys do. She's 53 on Saturday. Halle Berry, 55. Susan Olsen, Cindy from the Brady Bunch, 60. Oscar winner Marsha Gay Harden, 62. I think she won it for Pollock. Magic Johnson, 62. Antonio Fargas, that's Huggy Bear from Starsky and Hutch, 75. He was staying at a resort I was at in Jamaica way back in the 80s. He was a cool guy. Susan St. James from McMillan and Wife, 75. Steve Martin, 76. David Crosby, 80. Lynn Cheney, wife of the heart attack machine himself, 80. And Dash Crofts from Seals and Crofts. That would be your Summer Breeze, Diamond Girl, Get Closer, 81 today. And on Sunday, Jennifer Lawrence turns 31. Natasha Henstridge from The Whole Nine Yards and Species, 47. Ben Affleck, 49. Anthony Anderson, 51. Deborah Messing from Will and Grace, 53. 39 years ago today, 1982, a little movie called Fast Times at Ridgemont High introduced us to Spicoli and Rat. And I don't even remember what the count is now from famous people who were not famous at the time but are doing great right now. As a matter of fact, one of those guys stars in a movie we're going to be talking about here in just a couple of seconds that opens today. That was 39 years ago, and it was 26 years ago that Mickey Mantle died after a battle with liver cancer. He was only 63. It was 26 years ago. I got to talk to him once.
I want to ask you a question about questions. Do people want to know what Mickey Mantle thinks about baseball players today, or do they want to talk about the old days? And how do you feel about it? What would you rather talk about?
Well, mostly it's just what you've said so far. Like, since the strike, that's the main question. Next is, do I think that the kids nowadays are the baseball players as good as we were? And then thirdly, you know, like, what do I miss about baseball the most? And I think the only one I haven't answered for you is what I miss the most, and that's the guys that I played with. I loved them. I think that they were all regular people. I think that that's one thing that seems to me we were more of a family type deal. When I was with the Yankees, Yogi and Whitey and Billy Martin, Hank Bauer, all those guys were like my brothers. And I think probably what I miss about playing baseball more than anything else is not seeing all those guys all the time, you know. So I think that they miss the closeness that we used to have.
That was just one of those things, man. I'm sitting there in Omaha, Nebraska in 1981, and the Major League Baseball strike is going on, and so Mickey Mantle goes out and he's hitting the road. You know, I think he was plugging the casino stuff. You know, that's what got him sort of excommunicated from baseball for a while, is his connection with casinos, and the league has a dim view of that for reasons that are probably obvious. And today is Friday the 13th. Nobody knows for sure how it started, but one theory is that it has biblical origins and is tied to the number of guests at the Last Supper on Good Friday. Breaking a mirror. Ancient Romans believed that mirrors held a piece of your soul, and a separate myth said that our body renews itself every 7 years. So those two things together helped create the 7 years of bad luck thing. How about a black cat crossing your path? Well, in the Middle Ages, black cats were associated with witchcraft and demons, and that snowballed into the idea that if a black cat crossed your path, they were blocking your connection to God and path to heaven. How about the knocking on wood thing? Well, the idea here came from ancient civilizations that believed trees housed various spirits, and touching the tree would give you a protective blessing from those spirits. And white lighters, they say, are bad luck. This has roots from the 27 Club, where young musicians like Hendrix and Janis Joplin and Kurt Cobain all died at the age of 27. According to the superstition, they all had white lighters on them when they died, but Bic disposable lighters weren't even invented until 1973, and Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin died in 1978. So, as usual, bullshit on the internet. What else is new?
Change, change, change.
Change, change.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the much-anticipated release of Respect with Jennifer Hudson in the starring role as Aretha Franklin. You've got Forest Whitaker, Audra McDonald as her parents, Marlon Wayans as her hot-tempered first husband, Ted White. Let me just tell you, this movie, oh, you know, everybody was so excited about it. But it's like somebody took the movies Walk the Line, Bohemian Rhapsody, Rocket Man, Ray, Coal Miner's Daughter, The Doors, and What's Love Got to Do with It, threw them in along with Aretha Franklin's Wikipedia page, jammed the whole thing into a computer, and typed in, make this into a movie. Jennifer Hudson is great. And by the way, it's her singing. She's not lip syncing to recordings of Aretha Franklin. She is doing the singing, and it is very, very impressive. I wouldn't be surprised if they threw an Oscar nomination in her direction. The woman who wrote the screenplay for Thelma and Louise and hasn't had a big success since, and another woman who's basically a TV writer, came up with the story and wrote the screenplay, and a first-time director named Liesl Tommy, of all things. The three of them here are the problem. It's a very, very weak screenplay. And most disappointing, especially when you take in consideration how they're promoting this thing in the TV commercials, where it just seems like this celebration of life and joy and singing and dancing and, oh man, you can't miss this movie. That's because they know they got a stinker on their hands here. That's not what this movie is about. As a matter of fact, the movie's a fucking downer. And it's this formula again. something catastrophic happens in the person's childhood, and they have to overcome it, and they get drawn into drugs or alcohol along the way, but they have all this talent. They crash and burn. They recover. They've got people, standing behind them throughout the way. Jennifer Hudson as Aretha Franklin constantly flashing back to her childhood traumas. And the way they shoot the movie, they would have you believe that Aretha Franklin never smiled in her life or ever had a moment of joy. By the way, do you know who Marc Maron is? Marc Maron was a stand-up comedian for a long time. You saw him on Letterman and all sorts of shows like that. And then he became a very, very successful podcaster, still is, but has done a little acting on the side. And he plays one of the major record executives in this movie. And he's really, really good in this. I want to single him out for some recognition, in addition to Jennifer Hudson. And really, there's nothing that wrong with the cast, as I said, and the musical performances are outstanding. It's not enough to save the movie. And again, I mentioned all those previous movies. We've seen the Johnny Cash thing. Again, childhood trauma, and you know the rest. Bohemian Rhapsody, same thing with Freddie Mercury and Elton John and Ray Charles and Jim Morrison and on and on. So at some point, we're going to have to figure this out, because these biopics were very, very popular and very, very successful for a long time. But this movie is just another one of those. It's like a computer spit this thing out. So we're going to have to come to grips with this at some point and realize one of two things. Either the screenplay writers and directors have got to figure out a better way of telling the story. And again, I'm sitting here racking my brain trying to remember one time in this movie where Jennifer Hudson as Aretha Franklin smiles. And I can only remember a couple when she met some guys that she ended up in relationships with. Other than that, like I said, there is a discernible absence of joy in the story. And don't get fooled by those TV commercials. That's not what this movie is. But we either got to figure out a better way of telling these stories, or, and this is the hard part, we might have to come to grips with the idea that maybe not every iconic performer has a story that you can make a good movie into. You can make a movie, but I don't know if you can make a good one with every single music or entertainment icon there is. A disappointing 2.5 out of 5 quirks for Respect, which opens at a theater near you. How they know where you are, I don't have any idea, but that's something you can ponder for the weekend. All right, that's it. We are done. 7 o'clock, Monday through Friday. It's absolutely free. We're talking the J.C. Corcoran podcast. If you miss one, we always archive them. You can dig them up. You can binge listen on the weekend, whatever the case may be. Email me at jc@jconline.com if you want, or you can follow me on Facebook, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. Big thanks to Everett Marshall, the brains behind this whole thing. You have a great weekend. Talk to you on Monday. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
J.C. Corcoran Podcast.